Welcome to Blondie and the Brit, Writing, Publishing, and Beyond. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEANDBRIT.com. Welcome to Blondie and the Brit podcast. I am Blondie, KJ Waters.
And I'm Suzanne Cowman. I'm the Brit.
And together we're Blondie and the Brit.
Yay!
Woohoo! I am the author of Stealing Time.
And I'm the author of the Rejected Writers Book Club.
Today we have Charlie Stanton, who is the president of the audiobook company Just Imagine Inc., also has a widely popular podcast, which he's a co-host on. They are the number one audiobook company in the U.S. and Europe. He provides an excellent service, also has some publishing and marketing services as well. Welcome, Charlie.
Hey, thank you so much. It's such an honor to be on your show.
Yes, it's great to have you. We also have Suzanne Kelman here.
Hey, KJ. Hi there. Charlie, how's it going?
Smashing.
Smashing. All right, let's start with a brief description. Why don't you tell us a little bit about your company and what you all do?
We record audiobooks for different authors from all around the world, and we do e-books. And the main thing that I function in these days is doing our podcast, which is called Get Behind Me, Not Stay There, and it's an art and entertainment podcast where we'll do the news and views that you want to know for about, 20, 25 minutes or so. And then we always have a couple of interviews on with either artists or authors or poets, musicians, whatever. And it's great fun. And we feature one audiobook a show. So it's a nice hour-long show, and it's really kind of something cool that, people like. They seem to enjoy it, all around the world. We've been doing it for years now. And the variety of people that we have on are just, what makes the show.
Yeah, it's a great show. Actually, I've been on it. We'll have to put the link up to my show. You did a great interview. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. You had great questions. Probably one of the best interviews I've ever had with. I've been on several radio shows and other things. Sorry, I didn't mean to insult those people that interviewed me, but Charlie rules. It's a great interview. Of course, what turns out is that our lovely hour interview got, boiled down to 15 minutes because it wasn't the KJ Waters show. It was your show with all kinds of other great information. And I think there was a singer on there. What episode was that? Number 65 or something?
I think so. I think you were on with Ivy Blue.
That sounds familiar. Yeah, thank you. Tell us what you do. I know you specialize in indie authors as well. Can you give us an idea? I want to do my book in audio format, and I've been talking to an individual voice actor, but you were telling me during my interview that you had all these, actors that are at your disposal, and tell us a little bit how that process works.
Well, how our process works would be, your book would be sent to Acquisitions, which we do out of New York. And they would review it and see if it's something that we're interested in doing. They make you an offer through your agent or through you, which either one.
Right.
And then if you did the audiobook, you would retain the rights, of course, to the printed book. And, and we would record it from there. Now, usually what happens when we record is we have a host of narrators that we use. A lot of them are thespians. They've done Shakespeare plays, been on Broadway. A lot of them, from the movies, like Val Kilmer and Jason Alexander, who played George on Seinfeld, who, by the way, gets a bad rap because this guy can sing like nobody's business.
Wow.
Yeah, he's an excellent reader.
Wow.
And Bronson Pinchot, and he reads for us. And, we've had, just all kinds of different, people, like I said, from movie stars, to authors themselves, to, to voiceover actors, to,
Do you ever get Gerard Butler in the mix? Because I'll sign up for that. But I have to supervise his reading.
What if we did the KJ book?
Oh, my God. That would be amazing.
Gerard reading Stealing Time.
Oh, heck yeah. Damn, he's got a nice voice. Okay, sorry.
That's why you want him signed up, because he has a
I have to, like I said, I have to supervise, though. I'd have to be right there on the spot.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure you would be. Yeah, so that's what you are doing. Audiobooks. It takes a. It's like you ladies are discovering in the podcasting and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff that goes into it that you don't really notice. When you're listening to the finished product.
Oh yeah, I'm sure.
And when you see the finished product, you're just like, wow, I didn't know it took that much to do it. But never been a more exciting time to be in the publishing business is because now it's the same as true in the. Recording the music industry too, because even though you'll hear artists say that they never, I can't make the billions I was making before, off of records. And that's not the case with books, see, because people still buy books. They buy the physical book.
I have people that have read my book that have bought, they wanted a paperback. They also wanted the ebook. And then if I do an audiobook, hopefully they'll get that as well. So you can have, you know, multiple avenues, you know, for one story. So if someone is wanting to do your book, what kind of criteria are you looking for when you decide if you're going to turn this into an audiobook? Obviously, it's a business decision for you. What kind of things do you look into?
Well, you know, like I said, that's done in acquisitions in New York. And there's a group of people there that they get a lot of submissions, as you can imagine.
Yeah.
And, you know, they decide, you know, to look for, like, what's up. We got your categories. You know, you want so much education. You want so much, you know, classic literature. You know, you want so much religious. And then you want what's popular, too, because not everyone's going to, you know, write Harry Potter or 50 Shades of Grey and just hit it right out of the ballpark. Both yeah. those authors, those were both their first books, you know?
Is that true?
So,
wow.
You know, and then, like, Interview with Vampire was also Anne Rice's first book.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know that. How interesting.
I didn't realize that either.
Yeah, I can tell you a little story about her with the when she was getting published back in the day before you could self-publish or there was internet. There wasn't an internet. You know, you just had to, you know, submit your book to the publishers and then, you know, you hope you got noticed and things like that. Well, with the Interview with the Vampire, she was telling us that she had an agent. She knew some guy who worked at Random House who was you know, high up in the company. And I'm sure he got a lot of requests and she says, she gave her her book, and she goes, well, next time you see him, you think, you know, he might read this or pass it on to somebody who would. She goes, oh, okay, I'll do it. She gives it to her boss at work on a weekend, and he ended up, you know, being sick for the next week, right? He went home and got sick. So he ended up reading her whole book.
Oh, wow.
Right? And, you know, so she was telling, she goes, yeah, so because he got sick that week and he had the book, he read it. Then he called her up and said that he wanted to do the book. Not only that, he wanted to buy movie rights at the same time.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing.
That's an opportune illness.
Yeah, and that's just something that, you know, that it's one of those things that happens, you know. It's just like...
dumb luck.
Yeah, she... Well, you know, people will say that, you know, like right place, right time, stuff like that. But if you don't... It's like the old saying in the theater. You know, I could bring 10,000 people to your opening, you know, but you got to bring them back.
Yeah. Well, that's right, I mean, it has totally. to be a good story. That's the whole thing about it. But to get noticed like that right off the bat, out of being, you know, your very first book.
She got lucky on that one, but then she did a big book tour and promote it, which people used to do a lot back then. And her thing was she used to go into her book signings in a coffin.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
Back in the day when she wrote that book, she was very young, very beautiful, and like an Elvira type, you know? And so they would bring her into, you know, the book signings in the coffin. The coffin would open up, it would be her, she would sign the books.
Oh my gosh, how dramatic.
There you go, KJ. How can we do that with your book, you think?
I need to go in the time machine.
Time
machine. What about you? You're going to bake a pie and come in with your pie or your cake? And your tea. You could easily do that.
That's my cake.
Your cake. Oh my gosh. Okay, so
Edward, you can make a nice trailer out of that. You know, you could be at the beach. You know, then all of a sudden, you know, being, you know, in England.
Yeah. I just need the budget. That would be great.
And then all you got to do is, you know, have the music looped underneath it. You know, with what's his name, David Byrne. Going, this is not my beautiful house.
That's perfect.
That's exactly what I'm gonna do.
That's hilarious. Now listen, we Suzanne and I were talking about this earlier. When you give your book to someone to do as the audiobook, do you then do a script for the actors to follow, a kind of like a screenplay?
No. They read the book. That's why the book and almost everybody does this now, but it used to be they didn't. But it all unabridged. Unless they're really, really long books, then we will do an abridged version as well, because some people just, you know, don't have the time or the inclination, you know, to read unless they're in college and it's a requirement.
Yeah. No, I know. But I mean, so you just, the actors take the book, they go figure it out themselves. It's not like you set it up as a script of, you know, mood and other things that they need to convey. It's more you leave it up to the actors to figure it out. Is there a producer for the audio, or do they do that themselves?
There is a producer, there is a director, and there is an engineer that work with them when they're doing it. But they pretty much know what they're doing. You know, and they've read the stuff before, and, you know, there's nobody over them with a whip. You know, I said, do some feeling.
Yeah, they're paid out. Yeah, exactly. You get the record.
The chair and a big megaphone. Okay, give them some of the
Yeah. Okay, let's try this. I tell you, you know, we had the Shakespeare Theater Company come in, and we record like two or three of their plays every year for the season. We put them out on CDs, and the people that they have a big following around the world, people who can't make it, will order the CDs so they can hear the new play versions or hear the new plays and, you know, we do that for them, you know. But we had that man, they were doing a scene, and they asked us, "Hey, can you bring like 50 people down with this? Because we have a crowd scene." So we got 50 employees out, you know, out of one of the buildings and had them go into the studio. And it was just like, you know, you would think with a recording, you know, the director's there, right? He goes, "Okay, you know, this guy just lost his wife. He's going into town to get flogged. You know, who knows what happens next? You know, blah blah blah. You know, that's how Shakespeare plays are."
Everybody dies.
But don't worry about it, man, because you know there's a 9-foot tree that'll come and save you at the end. But so like he's in there, and like, you know, just he's setting up the scene for everybody. He's just telling him, you know, yeah, so we just need you to a big reaction for you. I'll go like, "Oh no, like the king is dead," or you know, whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So they do it, and they do it like 2, 3, 4 times. And he's like, no. He said, "We're going to do this. We'll play it again." So they played it again. I was sitting in the control booth kind of watching it. So then the director, he goes, "All right, everybody, listen. Here's the scenario. Nobody's getting paid this week. There was a glitch in the computer system."
Nice.
And it's like, everyone's like, "What?"
That was the reaction your crowd needed. You
know, that's what I'm looking for.
Anger and angst. That's hilarious. What are your best sellers for the audiobooks? What genres do the best?
Probably the best genres are, you know, mystery detective, you know, whodunits. Then, of course, I would say the most popular one is either romance, like a Harlequin type of thing.
Right.
Well, in the industry, they're called urban.
Bourbon?
Yeah. Like a city urban.
Oh, urban. I thought you said bourbon. I'm like, I haven't heard of that kind of book.
Those bourbon books are good.
This is the kind you need some bourbon just to finish it.
Just to get through it.
Well, I tell you what, if you've heard or you read any of those books, you would know that you do need that.
You do. Just a couple extra shots of bourbon. Yeah. Finish it up there. Oh, that's funny.
I don't even know what an urban book is. Can you explain that?
It's like they call it, it's like, you know, like, let's say a book about Chicago or about New York City or about London or any big city that has urban and decay in it. In urban decay, there's always going to be some sort of gangster, and there's going to be some sort of, you know, confrontation with the hot chicks that work for him and the detective that has to break it up and things like that. And it gets real graphic and stuff like that, and people gravitate towards that, right, especially in the cities, because they grow up, you know, living, you know, in that type of environment where they can recognize, you know, that, yeah, there are gangs on the corner and there are prostitutes all over the place. And, you know, there are this problem with the police. And so they identify with that kind of thing. We call them urban books.
Right.
Just because they sell well in urban cities.
Oh, yeah, it's urban fiction, like Boys in the Hood and that kind of thing.
Yeah, a little more graphic than the Boys in the Hood, but, you know, they all have a, you know, that's their hood.
Wow. It's amazing, you know, what people choose to read. Cause I need to escape, so that would be too stressful for me to read.
Yeah.
So it's always interesting to me.
I'm like, you know, I can't tell you how many books I've read where I'm like, you know, I just want to throw this out the window because, you know.
Yes. You told me that during the interview, that you have to read a lot of them, and then you got to interview the person. You're just like, you know.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, but then I have to keep in mind that, you know, a lot of it's just personal preference, because I know people that have read books, you know, who thought that they were just, you know, fascinating.
Yeah, I've met a lot of those too.
Look, let me tell you something. There's a book that we did, you know, and we sell a lot of it, Watership Down. I mean,
oh,
you know,
yes, I remember.
How can you pick up the bunnies? The bunnies are
don't
sweet.
Pick up the bunnies.
Yeah, you know what, man? Those bunnies can go back home to roost with roosters, because I'm not a big fan of Animal Farm. I'm not a big fan of, you know, Watership Down. If I didn't have to read it when I was in the fourth grade, then I don't think I should be required to read it as an adult.
You don't like the animals having people problems? Come on.
It's your answer.
That's interesting. That really leads me on to a question, which is, what is the biggest mistake that you see that people make? When you get a book and you look at it, you go, "Oh, man, if I could just tell them about this thing." What's the thing that you – is there anything that you see over and over that you wish people would do differently?
Well, you know, I guess it depends on the author, too, because, you know, with some authors, if I know them, I'm a lot more – I was going to say skeptical, but, you know, skeptical is one of them, but I'm also a lot more tedious, you know, when I read it, because, you know, I actually know them, so I know the thought process, and, you know, sometimes they'll write about stuff, and I'm like, yeah, look, dude, it didn't happen that way.
Lies, lies!
You're lying, you're not 6'2" with blonde hair, don't lie.
That's right, you know. Your wife is, but you're not.
No!
Okay. But But you don't see a mistake over and over that you wish people would know? Like, if you were going to tell, if you had to sit down and a whole bunch of authors and say, hey, guys, don't do this. This really is the thing that you shouldn't be doing. Is there anything you have like that? Because you see so many books.
You know, I see a lot of different writing styles. Some are real, you know, dry. Some are real humorous. Some are just try too hard. And, but, you know, the main thing for a book, you know, for any writer, you know, whether, you know them or you don't know them, is that they write an entertaining story.
Yeah.
You know, if it's, you could have, you know, the best actors in town, you know, and they're all on your new TV show. And if the show sucks, it doesn't matter who's famous and who's not. No one's going to watch it.
Yeah. Well, that's happened a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. And I find that with authors, you know, that, most authors, like any other, you know, people that express themselves in artistic form, you know, draw a personal experience. And so sometimes they don't know where to draw that line between what was personal and what is something that they're just fantasizing about.
Yeah.
So sometimes it gets really out there, especially in the science fiction world. You know, it's almost like you're reading a game, like Grand Theft Auto, the book.
yeah, because they're so far out there.
We were just talking about this the other day, KJ, weren't we? The huge names that people come up with, and you've got to try and remember them all when you're reading sci-fi.
Yeah, in sci-fi, that I don't have either. My brain's just not made that way. But if I can't pronounce like one or two, or in a lot of these science fiction books, it's like 12 names, all are like completely unpronounceable things you're not recognizing. I can't keep them straight. It's too much work. Too much brain power used on something that should be simple, like a name. You know, I think a lot of people like that stuff. I'm not putting it down, but just for me, I think I'm not, maybe I'm just not smart enough to follow that. I don't know.
You know, it's like, you know, fantasy novels like Game of Thrones, for example. You know, Game of Thrones has been around for a long time, and those books have been published for a long time, but you know, until they made them into a series where people could actually visualize the world and recognize the names, you know, and put it all together, that's when it took off. And now people buy those books just to read the books, you know, not necessarily watch the TV show.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's such a huge TV show. I mean, I know a lot of people that think it's the best show on TV, so.
I haven't had a chance to watch that yet. I have to get my Game of Thrones. I get so busy, I didn't get checked. But I heard it's incredible.
Yeah, me too. I have to cut out TV to actually write a book.
That's the thing, is I have so many things to do. But I will get around to it. I should get that. Everyone tells me it's great.
I don't think it'll be this year for you, Suzanne. Your book is being published. Your second one's coming out.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is good. You know, I like the Tudors better. So.
Oh, I love that. That was good. Except for, you know what bothered me about that show? Henry VIII was a big dude. He was tall. He was a big dude. Well, no, but the guy, that Reese guy or Rice, whatever his last name was, he was tiny. He was like, you know, 50. He's not a Henry VIII character. He did a great job. He was a great actor, but I don't know.
Do you guys like a little behind the scenes of the screenwriter about that?
Yes, tell us.
Well,
give us the dirt.
Apparently, that screenwriter, he had to kill it because it's all historic. He had to kill or behead all these different characters, and basically, so the end of the story always was he dies the same way. And so the biggest challenge for him on that script was, how do I make every single death a little different? You know, because it's the same story we did for the last 3 weeks. So he had a real challenge, and every time he had to behead someone, which was like the end of every, like Judas, he had to figure out a way to make it interesting for the audience so it didn't feel like it was the same thing.
Right.
That was his biggest challenge, writing that script.
So did he stick to the truth? I mean, there is a historical fact.
Well, he did. I mean, it's kind of like anything with screenwriting. He just found a different angle to come in and tell that story from.
Ah.
So it's not that it isn't the same story. You know how it is. Even when we write books, do we start with this character, that character? We have an overview. And what he did every time he hit the story, he had to figure out, how do I make this interesting and from a different point of view so it doesn't feel like I'm telling the same story over and over again.
Ah, very interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
How do you know that? Do you know the screenwriter?
I don't know the screenwriter personally, but I know the person who interviewed him about it. So he was telling us about
there
it.
You
so
go.
It was interesting.
You got a name drop, or are you just going to leave it big?
I can't, you know, I can't remember who it was, to be sure. I think I know who it was, but I don't want to say in case it wasn't that particular person. So So right. Yeah, it was really interesting.
That is very interesting. I did enjoy that show. And the one that I need to watch and I'm so far behind on is the Outlander series, because that is what inspired me to write my book. And I watched part of the first one. I watched it with my son, which turned out to be a mistake because there's tons of sex in it at the very end of the first season. So like the last episode, we're both looking at each other like, he's like, I think I'm going to go now, Mom. I was like, yes, please get out of here. I cannot enjoy this. So the first half of season one was fine because it was all this adventure stuff. But once those two got married, it was like, damn, they just can't keep their hands off each other. And
please hope, son, this is an urban story.
It's an urban story. This is how they do it in the hood, baby.
Yeah, this is what happens when you go to the big city, man.
Stay home.
Oh my God. So, kind of switching gears a little bit here, because I want to talk a little bit about your podcasting. So,
sure.
We have the biggest challenge we have is environment. You know, you call an author and you never know what environment you're going to. I mean, we can control our end, but like they have windows or they have dogs, they have microwaves. What do you do? How do you overcome that? Do you have just a great editor, or do you actually talk to your authors? What do you do with that?
Both. We have a great editor. Sarah Summers is his name. And, two, there's not a whole lot you can do. I mean, you know, it depends on who you're talking to. Like a lot of people that, you know, that I will interview, or that Holly Lorraine Adams will interview. She does mainly the art stuff because she's an artist herself. And I found out the hard way when I was interviewing an artist, and he's like, you know, the next, you know, Picasso, and I'm talking to him like, yes, I saw your painting, man. You know, like, I don't know if it was as good as, you know, the Campbell's soup thing, you know, but. You know,
not the right guy for the interview. That's
right there, man. I mean,
all you hear is the click of the phone going down. You know?
And he was actually really good. He's a famous painter, and he actually played right along with me. And I think it was really refreshing for him, you know, not to answer everything with such a dry, droll, you know, response, you know, because he's going, no, you're right. You know, he goes, you know, Andy really pegged it with that Campbell's soup thing, and I go, yeah. Yeah. I'm telling you, man, you know, I go, when I saw it, I immediately thought like, wow, you know, these two things go together, you know, art and Campbell's soup, and it is good.
This is how we're going to bill you on the podcast.
Exactly, you know, and so like I asked him that, you know, and then I go, so I've seen your stuff, and he goes, yeah, he goes, I like, you know, to use, you know, different abstract colors when I'm bringing things out, so, you know, and he starts giving me a bit of an explanation, and I said, well, what does that mean to me? And he goes, well, pretty much nothing.
Apparently.
In fact, I'll just eat the soup. That's where I'm going.
Yeah. I'm thinking, you know, hey, you know, Andy Warhol, Peter Matz, that about sums up my artistic career. So.
Yeah, okay.
What is the most memorable interview you ever did? Can you remember?
The most memorable one. No, I mean, there was a lot of them that I've done that, you know, that I liked a lot and surprised me. Jack Englehart comes to mind. He's a very, very, very good author. And he's written books, you know, since the 50s. He used to hang out with Jack Kerouac and Oscar Berg. When we interviewed him, he gave me a lot of stories about him and Lennon and Kerouac and Guinness and stuff, you know, drinking in bars in the village back then. And I was like, dude, what were you guys doing? Like, solve those problems, you know, this and that, and all this, you know, legends, right? You know, and he goes, no, dude. He goes, we were young. None of us were even working. You know, he goes, the only one that was remotely famous was John Lennon, and that was only if he had the other three with him. He goes, without that, nobody would know who he was, you know?
Oh, that's funny.
Wow, that's incredible.
So that was a good one, you know, and he also wrote that book, Indecent Proposal, with Robert Redford.
All right.
Cool.
Demi Moore, Woody Harrelson. He has some funny stories about that, you know, and that was cool. Yeah, I like talking with him because I didn't know what to expect. You know, he has a big body of work and he's quite famous, and, you know, I just didn't know how to approach it, whether, you know, everything was going to be, you know, oh, that was so long ago, here's what I'm working on now, or he was going to be in a real receptive mood and tell stories, and he was. He was in a very receptive mood and told some really funny stories. You know,
can people still catch that interview on your podcast?
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, he told us an amazing story about, you know, when it was casting time for Indecent Proposal, he wanted Tom Cruise, and the directors and producers said no. And, you know, he was pushing it for him, you know, and they go, why, you know, and he said, because he's the biggest movie star on the planet right now, and at the time, he was. And they wouldn't do it, you know? He kept, you know, pushing for it, and they finally went with Robert Redford, and then he goes, they explained it to me in a meeting with my agent, and this is the part I thought was hysterical, right? And he goes, the first time he said, look, we don't want Tommy's too young. And, we just don't think he'd be a good fit for the movie. You know, I don't know how else I can explain it to you, but that's our decision with Robert Redford. And he goes, well, I don't get it, man. He's the biggest, movie star out there. He's a great actor. And then his agent said, and then the screenplay guy said, look, man, why would a guy who's better looking than Jeff Moore pay her $1 million? And he goes, oh, now I get it. No. Why'd you guys just tell me that? And they go, well, we thought you'd pick up on it, Jack. Why could a 25-year-old star go up to this chick who's married and say, give you $1 million?
Good point.
We got to go with Robert Redford because, it's more believable. He's older. He has the money. He has, this is his last fling.
Yeah, I don't think you're right. I don't think that would have worked in the same way if it had been some young, cool guy.
Yeah, you have to buy the major premise of the entire movie is that he wants her that bad. Like, he could get anyone. Why would he bother to spend that much money? Okay.
Yeah, that is good. Hey, as we're starting to sort of get, hopefully wrap up, though we could go on forever. I'm having too much fun.
Yeah.
Just tell us a little bit about your podcast, because obviously we've been mentioning them a lot. Tell them where people can read, get to that or hear interviews. Where can we find you, basically?
Well, you can find us on the justimagineinc.com, and the Inc is spelled I-N-K. And just go to our blog page. You can always see the most current show and read about everybody who's on there and get all the links to what they do and where you can get their wonderful work. You can hear the show there. You can hear it on Facebook. You can hear it on PRX. You can hear it on iTunes. You can hear it on Podbean. You can hear it on 89.5 FM.
Wow.
And YouTube.
If we stand outside, we can hear it, right?
Yeah. You probably could.
You're on YouTube, too. I saw a little, when you all did mine, you did like a quick little brief video introduction and then the podcast, so.
Yeah, we are on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel. We have a good subscription, and we always try to do a promo for every different show.
Where are your studios, just so we can picture? Where about are you in the country?
We're Ashland, Oregon, which is in Southern Oregon.
Okay, yeah, I'm up in Washington State, so I'm just up the road.
Just up the road.
If you look at our set list of all the people that have been on our show, it's just like, it's amazing.
It is amazing. It is amazing. Yeah. Just in one episode, you have, like you say, you do an art section, you talk about the entertainment news, and then you have an author on, and then you talk about the audiobook. It's just a lot in a podcast that you do. I'm not surprised you do it once a month, because it's got to be a ton of work just to record all those pieces and then put it together where it all fits into an hour, because it's a lot of information.
What we do is, we go in and we record once a month. And when we record it for multiple shows.
Yeah, I was thinking that would probably be
more
efficient.
That's what I was wondering. Yeah. That's interesting.
And it's been a fascinating conversation. Matter of fact, I'm going to instruct my children to play it at my funeral.
Laughter on that one.
There you go. Here's a slice of the old man when he still had it.
Here's a slice of the old man.
That actually leads us really nicely onto the way we kind of like to wind up our interviews, and that is we like to do a lightning round. Are you up for a lightning round?
I am up for a lightning round.
Yeah.
Do you want me to do it, KJ?
Yeah, why don't you do it?
Okay. So we're just going to ask you questions, and you have to just do really fast the first thing that comes to you, okay?
And no long, giant stories in the middle. You just quick.
Just jump right in.
Jump right in.
Okay, so get yourself ready there. Here we go. First question, tea or coffee?
Tea.
Okay. I thought for a minute he was really thinking. Tea. Okay, got it. For writing, you don't write that much, or do you? Are you a writer?
I have written a few letters at times.
A few letters?
Letters?
Yeah, after spending together,
dear grandma.
I don't know if that qualifies as a book, but
So we're gonna skip question two because that doesn't apply to you. Okay, what do you want to be when you grow up?
Oh my god!
Let me rephrase that.
Okay.
What did you want to be when you grew up?
Oh, when I was a kid, I wanted to be a rich gentleman hippie living on the beach.
Wow!
How did that work out for you?
It happened.
Yay!
Perfect. Is there a book that you could read every single year?
Papillon.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Ah, okay, cool. Dog or cat?
Neither.
That's a fair enough answer.
But What author would you most like to have dinner with, and it can be dead or alive?
Henri Sattery.
Henri.
Cool. Favorite vacation spot?
Haven't been there yet.
What? Cool. I love that. You're leaving it open. Okay. Favorite book genre to read?
Autobiographies.
If money was no object, where would you live?
Aston, Oregon.
See, I agree.
He's got
I
it all. Oregon
is such a cool place. Okay, favorite comfort food?
Candy.
Yeah, but can you narrow that down, or is it just any candy?
Chocolate bars, you know, that kind of thing.
Cool, I hear you.
Yeah. No nylons, just the chocolate bars.
Okay, we'll make sure we won't send you any nylons. Okay, do you have a nickname?
Do I have a nickname?
Yeah.
My nickname is Charlie Love.
Charlie Love?
Yeah.
Do we want to go into that, KJ?
That sounds like a DJ name.
And it does sound like a DJ
Charlie
name.
Charlie Love. Tell us.
No, it's just a cool name.
It is
okay,
a cool name.
Charlie Love. Sweet.
I will tell you, I knew this guy, and he was like a real player, you know, and stuff like that, you know, and he's always introducing me every time we go around. He goes, yeah, this is my friend Charlie Love.
And it sounded good.
They would go like, no way. And he goes, oh, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, they were like, you know, really, Love? I go, yeah, you know, like Mike Love from the Beach Boys, you know.
Charlie Love.
Yeah, and then it would always end badly because they go, oh, you know the Beach Boys? No, but I have one of the records. So, you know, meetings, you know, just got to be the next step, right?
Right, that's right. Obviously.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, beach or mountains?
Beach.
Yeah, baby.
Awesome.
That's all I got.
That's all you got.
Good.
All I got.
Good answers.
Okay. Here's a little trivia question for you. And you were saying that about the records and stuff. It reminded me of Sting. When they asked the Sting, Gordon Sumner, why they named the band Police. And he said it was a funny thing, but he goes, we just decided it was such a, thought it would be such a joke that they named their band Police. That way they could say, everybody could say, I have a Police record.
Ah. Oh, that's so funny.
I never even thought about that. That's hysterical.
I love the Police, too. I should have known that piece of trivia. Yeah, I do know why they call him Sting. That was an obvious one. Y'all know that.
Yeah. You know what? I'm sorry, KJ. I'm going to take 2 points off for that one.
Oh, he's keeping score. I'm in big trouble.
You might make it up with a super lightning round.
Super lightning round. Ooh, that sounds amazing.
Words in your segment where we only ask questions of people with superpowers. Now, which one is yours?
I like that. We should add that to ours, Sam.
Well, you know, mine is that, you know, I can read, you know, without my glasses.
Thank you for joining us today on Blondie and the Brit. It was excellent to have Charlie Stinton here. Charlie, thanks for coming along and joining us.
Hey, it was my pleasure. And I tell you what, I look forward to, you know, hearing it. I look forward to hearing it in many, many more episodes. I'll tell everyone out there that follows Goodbye May I Stay There to also listen to Blondie and the Brit. And you're just going to have a lot of entertainment.
Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right, then. Hey, thanks for having me on.
It really was fun having you on. You made us laugh a whole lot. I feel like I've had an ab workout.
And we needed to.
Do this and then, you know, it's been such a blast, man. Thank you so
great.
Much.
Great, thank you. And
yeah,
you know,
you too. You were really fun. You really cheered us up today.
Hey, anytime, you know, and always a pleasure. And, you know, yeah, we'll set you up, man. Anything you need, you let us know. And we'll.
Yo, thank you, Charlie
great,
Love.
Thank you
That's
so
why
much.
You call Charlie Love.
Charlie Love. Because we love Charlie. Be sure to join us next week on Christmas Eve, or you can catch that episode later. But we are doing something really special. We have a bloopers episode, kind of a behind-the-scenes, Suzanne and I hosting, so it will be a very entertaining. We had a lot of fun putting it together for you. So join us then. You can find our show notes and more information about our podcast at blondieandbrit.com. That's BLONDIEAND. BRIT.com.